Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fantide, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am journalist and editor Travell Anderson.
And I am halfway awake, but ready to go to take a nap, Jared Hill.
Child, you always tired.
Listen, I don't know if it's the medicine or if it's just being
the ways
tired
of the world.
Listen, it's probably a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. Coming up on the show this week, it's all about you and y'all. It's been a while since we've given you a What Was Said episode, and we try to do one every quarter, and this is that. Plus, we have something we've promised you for a long time, an announcement about Fantide merch a little bit later on in the show. But before we get to your listener letters, I want to update y'all on a quick little Dionne Warwick moment, because she's given us a lot. First of all, did you know that her bio says...
I'm not doing this with you.
I want to go back and listen to the old episodes, because I don't feel like I've said that multiple times, but I probably have. Anyway,
you
so
definitely did,
Dionne has given us a little bit more than we were expecting normally. So first of all, she has a tweet that I love, and then she gave us her first YouTube video, which is only 30 seconds long, but she's upset and I'm happy about it. Her tweet on the 20th that really spoke to my spirit, it says, quote, "Do you think I care what younger generations say about me? I'll wear this fanny pack. Who cares?" Like, who is she talking to? I don't know who was upset with her about the fanny pack, but like, I'm enjoying it. And I want to know if she's like selling Dionne Warwick merch now.
I was just about to say, before the holiday break, she mentioned that she was, you know, getting merch together. I would definitely buy a Hussy fanny pack.
Yes, okay? 100%.
I would definitely. Hell, I almost spent, what, $80 on the Ivy Park fanny pack, okay? I didn't, praise the Lord.
I was going to say.
But I almost did.
Emphasis on almost. but I mean, like, the idea of making people wait for merch is so rude and disrespectful. I can't believe she did that. Anyway, Dionne also has her very first video on her YouTube channel, and it's a bit of a complaint. Take a listen.
Well, listen, I have had it with COVID. I have had it. I am ready for it to get out of my face and your face and everybody else's face. Okay. It's been one whole year. I have been cooped up in my house, which I don't mind. I love my house now. But a whole year, it is time for a reprieve. I should be up for parole right now. Okay? Let me out. Let me out. I mean it.
I'm not exactly sure who she's talking to, but I just appreciate that Dionne is as tired of COVID as we all are.
Period.
I'm about sick of wearing masks. I'm tired of, like, being stuck in the house. Mind you, I'm still wearing a mask and I'm still keeping my ass at home, but, you know, it is what it
Period.
Is.
Period. We should say, right? We should say that we do have an episode coming up on, you know, the vaccine and stuff like that, because we've had some conversations about that. I think that's actually next week's episode. Spoiler alert. That's not how a spoiler alert works.
It's not. I mean, kind of. I guess that kind of works. So, Travell, you've got our first letter this week.
Yes, yes, yes. This letter comes from Dr. Diet, longtime listener. She lets us know, actually, that the reason why her letter is so long is because she hasn't written into us for a while. And so she gave us that disclaimer up top, which is not how this works, Dr.
Say,
Diet.
Like, do we bank them? Like, how does that work? I don't know.
But... thank you so much for your support. She's been a longtime supporter. So she's responding to last week's episode about, I'm calling it Family Ties. I think we titled it, We Are a Family, Like a Giant Tree. They wouldn't let me put Giant Tree in the headline, y'all. FYI.
It was too long. Come on.
All right, so this email from Dr. Diet, she says, "I want to provide a therapist's family systems perspective on this episode and what Travell shared. Reminder for the people who didn't listen to last week, maybe you should. The conversation was about some issues that I've been having, setting, you know, different boundaries with family and working through that. And so Dr. Diet says, I work with families among the many things I do. And even when I am not working with the family, every individual I see has a family, and that history is in important to the work. I often tell folks that families are like aliens. The phrasing, FYI, is intentionally misleading. She also notes that we're not getting into the definition / politics of the word alien.
Praise the Lord.
She's just using it as a term to mean like someone who is treated differently. All right. So she says, if you think about the family as planet Earth, as soon as one member of the family starts changing the roles that they have on planet Earth, the family system pulls or pushes back. It is really, really good at pulling that member back into their role in the system or ostracizing them for going against the system. Mm. The person who is pulled or pushed by the family is the alien, right, in this case. Sometimes that pulling and pushing process is direct feedback. Sometimes it is an internalized version of the system. She says it's usually a combination of the first and the second, or just the second, because hashtag the psychology of trauma. The goal, though, is to get to when the first happens without a massive triggering of the second. So if the alien in this case is me, Travelle, it makes perfectly good sense why, quote unquote, setting boundaries, as Jared said, is so hard for them, for me. I think anyone on the outside who did not exist in this kind of planetary system wouldn't get their struggles and can easily say, just set the boundary and the other person has to deal with it, without understanding the enormous amount of internal pain that I think, Travelle, you alluded to, but did not necessarily spell out. It is something I am understanding deeply, not just as a family therapist, but as someone who exists/existed in this same kind of system growing up. To wrap up, she says, it would be great if Travelle could get to this place where they can just set the boundary. However, this emphatic assertion neglects the fact that every time a situation like this arises with family, it reactivates years of traumatic internal process and family bonding that is negligent of the triggers of that system. It is an emphatic assertion that cannot honor the enormous amount of work that folks like Travelle have to do to move to set those boundaries. She goes on to also note that she says, pain, and that is not a word that I use in my experience. So she just wanted to recognize that. And lastly, she says, hopefully, Travelle, you have space with your therapist to work on the pain that every single situation like this will and does trigger for folks in this kind of family system. So, yes to everything that she said. I wanted to read out this letter just to give folks a little update, I guess. Because at the time of last week's episode, I had not talked to Monique in a month of Sundays. And so I chatted with her, I think the day after the episode came out. And, you know, she repeated a lot of the things that you said on the show and that other members have, you know, either tweeted about or messaged us about in terms of, like, you know, just basically realizing how you said that, right, setting a boundary and somebody not respecting that boundary, right, is it's disrespectful. It is a violation. It shows that they don't really care. And it is kind of a negative type of response. And then she ultimately said that, you know, It also requires, right, me as an individual, when I set the boundary, I also have to adhere to the boundary, right? Mm. It's not just the other person, right, that is disregarding what I've set in place. It also is me disregarding, right? And so the ways in which we as individuals can sometimes be complicit, right, in the very issues, right, that we are having, particularly in this case with family, but like this also extends to friends, your chosen family, et cetera. So thank you for that, Dr. Diane.
I was curious after we taped the episode if you had talked to your family about this before going on the show and talking about it, or if you talked to them before putting it out, or if they said anything back to you.
No, nobody in my family listens to the show.
Okay.
Of their own volition. Also, I feel like at this point, my mom is very aware that, like, I'm an open book with my life, right?
Right.
Like, I've shared a lot of things that I'm sure she would rather me not share, whether it was, like, in events on campus, back in school, or in op-eds and opinion pieces that I've written. It just is what it is. It comes with the Travelle Anderson territory. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know if she's ever going to listen. I also don't... it is what it is. It's what it is.
Okay. All right. No, I in the last, I would say, couple of months have started to learn more and more how many members of my family are listening to the show, which I wasn't expecting. I don't have a problem with it. I did not expect that so many people in my family were listening to the show, which will probably be really interesting come, you know, a holiday where we're all in the same place in 20 years when COVID's over.
Be like, Jerry, you remember that time you said this about such and such?
And the honest answer will probably be no. But, like, right. I mean, I don't know. So I was really curious how your family had responded. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the dragon continues, your feedback and more coming up next.
Hey, kid. Your dad tell you about the time he broke Stephen Dorff's nose at the Kids' Choice Awards?
In Dead Pilot Society, scripts that were developed by studios and networks but were never produced are given the table reads they deserve.
When I was a kid, I had to spend my Christmas break filming a PSA about angel dust. So yeah, being a kid sucks sometimes.
Presented by Andrew Reich and Ben Blacker. Dead Pilot Society, twice a month on MaximumFun.org.
You know, the show you like, that hobo with the scarf who lives in a magic dumpster.
Doctor Who?
Yeah!
Hey, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin. Together, we're The Flophouse,
a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Movies like Space Hobos, Into the Outer Reaches of the Unknown and the Things That We Don't Know, the movie, and also Who's That Grandma?
Zazzle Zippers, Breakdown 2, and Backhanded Compliment.
Elvis is a Policeman.
Baby Crocodile and the Happy Twins.
Leftover Potatoes?
Station Wagon 3.
Herbie Goes to Hell.
New episodes available every other Saturday.
Available at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye. Bye. Welcome back to Fantai. So Jordan tells us we had a couple of voicemails that came in a little late from our anniversary show. And our first one is from Todd. Let's take a listen.
Hello, Travell and Jarrett. My name is Todd. I am a cishet white dude from Michigan. I was raised in a, I'll say closeted racist household. And I have since married into, a couple years now, a low-key homophobic and out and proud racist family. I just wanted to wish you a belated congratulations on your 1 year. I first discovered the show in August. I listened to my first episode, the Michael Jackson R. Kelly episode, in December. I fell in love with it. I went back to the beginning and I started binging ever since. I just wanted to say thank you for everything, all the hard work you've done. And I know you didn't do it for me, but I'm glad that I've seen benefit from it. You've already made me a better person. And you have put me in the position of the guy who has awkward, uncomfortable conversations with the rest of his family. And no matter how uncomfortable it is, I know that it's worth it. It's important. And thank you just for everything. Thank you for making a great show. Thank you for changing my perspective and for making me realize just how little I understood. And wow, just thank you. This is a great show. It's been a wild year, and I hope to hear many more. All right, have a good day.
Wow. First of all, I don't know why I'm always surprised to hear, like, cishet white men are listening to the show, because I never imagined them listening.
They're not all trash, Jared. Like,
I know. And I just...
The bulk of them are.
Okay. You know, at least 58% of them voted for Trump. But I think it's actually 55%, whatever it is. But thanks a lot, Todd. First of all, it sounds like he was out on a walk. And, like, that was me this morning, like, struggling out there walking. And so, like, I appreciate you taking some time during your walk to shoot us a message.
Yeah, I mean, I also, you gave us congratulations for, you know, getting to our second season, second year. I also want to congratulate you on, you know, marrying into, as you say, the low-key homophobic
outwardly racist.
I mean, I hate that for you.
Listen.
But I'm glad to hear that you are having, you know, the necessary conversations with those folks.
I mean, first of all, I loved that he said low-key homophobic. As opposed to like high-key. But like, I also think to myself, like, what are those conversations like? I want to know more about what you're hearing from your family and how you're countering it. You don't want to hear that.
I just, you know, I'm just not sure this is the show for that. you know, maybe someone else's show is great for that. And we do, I mean, we've spoken about before about, you know, our thoughts about who our audience is, right? The people, not the people that we're targeting, right? And the people we do it for, but the people who actually listen into it. And it's always interesting to hear from white folks in particular about the ways in which they're using the conversations we have here to, like, you know, inform their conversations that they're having with, you know, people in their community.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we have an email from is it Alicia or Alicia? Not sure. And she has a book recommendation.
Yeah, so she has a book recommendation also in response to last week's episode in which I poured out my heart to you people. And wow. She says, I resonated a lot with what Travelle was saying on today's episode on family dynamics. I'm the oldest in a large family, adopted my siblings the summer after I turned 18. Ooh. She gives us detail about that, which I won't read on the air. Her mother had a stroke when she was 21, and she since has taken on the de facto parent role for her as well. She's paralyzed and requires around-the-clock care, and her husband and I, Alicia's husband and her, have been caretakers for her mother since 2016. Right before the pandemic, the mother developed a necrotizing wound, and we had to make the agonizing decision with her care team to put her in a nursing home. She's been in a nursing home throughout the pandemic, which has been terrifying. Alicia goes on to say, this is a all too long way of saying that I very much recommend reading Your Turn for Care, Surviving the Aging and Death of the Adults Who Hurt You by Laura Brown. This book speaks to a lot of the complex emotions of putting up boundaries and keeping them with my family, especially in unique family situations. I'm ferociously protective of my mom and would fight a bear underwater for her, but I found this book so helpful to help frame how to maintain healthy boundaries when those dependent on you and society at large tell you to pour yourself past the point of your ability. Thank you, Alicia, for that book recommendation. And if any of you listening are going to pick up that book, make sure you do it from an independent bookstore, particularly a black owned one. My go-to is the Reparations Club based here in LA. But there are a variety of ones across the world that you could get that from.
I also, I was not familiar with necrotizing wound. I know necro has something to do with dead or death. For those of you that are curious, like I was looking it up. It's necrotizing is causing or accompanied by necrosis. Necrosis is the death of most or all cells in an organ or a tissue due to disease, injury, or failure of blood supply. So yeah, I was like, whoa, what is that? That sounds really, really difficult. So the book is called Your Turn for Care, Surviving the Aging and Death of the Adults Who Hurt You. I feel like it's got to be a really difficult thing to do, to take care of someone who did not treat you well, right? Who was not really there for you in ways that were of value or that were traumatic even.
And even, I think it's also, right, difficult to take care of somebody who was there for you, right? Because at the core of it is a... I don't want to say it's putting you out there, but it definitely is requiring you to engage in, you know, activity and conversations that you might not have been thinking about, right? Like, if you did not prepare, which most of us, who prepares, right, to take care of their parents, you know, if they have a stroke or if they fall down the steps or if they do, if any of these types of situations that we know happen to aging folks, in particular, none of us plan for that, right? And so it definitely is kind of it requires you to put yourself in a circumstance that you weren't prepared for, right? Yeah. And so I think it's difficult, you know, regardless of whether or not your parent or your guardian, like, you know, loved you appropriately or, you know, otherwise traumatized you. So thank you for that, Alicia.
Thanks so much for that. We have another voicemail that comes from Annalise. I'm guessing it's probably not Annalise Keating.
Why is your penis on a dead girl's phone?
But I guess we'll see.
Happy anniversary, Fanti. It's kind of funny. It's also the 1 year anniversary nearly of the Pando. When it first hit, I was living in Tokyo, far away from my family. And my hobby was just walking around by myself listening to Fanti, basically. And the way Jarrett and Travelle talked to each other kind of reminded me of just hanging out with mates, and it helped me feel less cripplingly lonely. So thanks. Love the show.
Aww. Well, that is definitely not Annalise Keating.
It's not Annalise Keating. love the accent. It is kind of crazy to me that we've done almost this entire series in the pandemic. Like, I don't know what it's going to be like to do this show outside of the pandemic again. Like,
right.
We were talking before we got on the air, going into the studio or not, or doing it from home or whatever. Like, yeah, we've been riding this pandemic the whole show.
Right. I feel like we recorded the first three episodes, maybe the first four.
I feel like it was maybe four or five. Yeah. Something like that, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, shit hit the fan.
Right. Yeah.
And so it definitely is interesting to use the show as kind of a barometer for, you know, this last year of foolishness.
Because
I think for me, I started, like, you know, quarantining, or at least staying at home. I think it was March 13th is the date. That was like, I think, or at least that was the date that my partner basically moved in with me. If that wasn't the actual date of the first stay at home order. But yeah, it's been a wild year. I definitely want to go back to the studio though.
I know you really want to go back to the studio, and I'm like, I'm really comfortable in my office at this point. I done set it up. I done lit this hoe. I got a TV on the wall with a fake fireplace. Like, there's a lot going on in here. So I'm real comfortable. Okay, talk to us about this email from Lucas about the HBCU episode.
Yes, all right, so email from Lucas. That episode was titled HBCUs Are a Different World, which we've had like 12 references to a different world throughout the life of this podcast thus far.
All right, sit corrected. All you girls will be on my list.
That sounds about right.
So if you haven't watched it, make sure you do. Lucas says, hello, beautiful people. I've been pondering this question for some time, even before the episode on HBCUs. A friend of mine in search for grad schools mentioned Howard as a top contender. Mind you, both my friend and I are white men. I felt a certain way about his desire to go to Howard. My initial thoughts were that's not a space for you. Essentially thinking that HBCUs are made for, catered toward, and a space dedicated to black folks. I think part of my problem is not that I think he wouldn't be welcome or that he shouldn't engross himself amongst the diverse crowd at HBCUs, but rather that he would be taking the spot from a prospective black student who would likely benefit more from the experience in education. When questioned, my friend stated that Howard was a good option solely because it was one of the best options for the program he was searching for. Is this statement forgetting all the other good aspects of HBCUs that doesn't include just education? Is my friend okay to apply? Was Joshua Packwood cool? I know white students are an extremely low percentage at HBCUs anyway, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I know also that white staff and teachers at HBCUs are another can of worms, but not totally disconnected from this conversation.
First of all, shout out to Joshua Packwood. So I was okay with this. I'm very fancy this one. So I was like, I mean, I feel like I don't mind a few white people going to HBCUs. It made me think about, I think it was in episode 5, Why White People Love Wakanda, that we talked about how the Abbey, a gay club here in Los Angeles, is, you know, very much so populated by straight people, right? And so how it makes that space feel a little less safe. In that, like, people don't know what to expect from the people that they approach there. And so it kind of makes me think about that when I'm thinking about white folks just, like, en masse going to HBCUs. I mean, again, shout out to Joshua Packwood, but like Joshua was like very, you know, involved in the culture at Morehouse in a way that I would think is important for someone that's white going to an HBCU. And like kind of in the same way that I was saying that white folks need to respect the space that they're going into when they're going to places like the Abbey or, you know, wherever else that might be queer, or the way that white folks move into spaces that are black with gentrification and stuff like that. I think if you have a respect for the space that you're going into and are intellectually curious, I could maybe see that being fine. I don't know where I fit on this one.
I think there's a couple things here in this question letter that I want to highlight, right? And it's the idea that first and foremost, right, the friend said that he wants to go to Howard and he's interested in Howard because Howard has the best program, period, for what he's looking to do, right? And I think that is... I just want to shout out the ways in which, right, HBCUs are doing the work, right? And HBCUs have, you know, top programs that rival, right, if not surpass, right, all of the non-black colleges and universities. And so I think that's a good start that his interest is rooted in the education, and not some sort of, you know, voyeuristic, you know, exploration of, you know, the nignogs at Howard, right? And at the same time, I also understand the concern of Lucas, right, about, you know, it's a black space and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I think ultimately my thing is that white person who was in that space have to realize that they are a white person in a space that was not created with them in mind, right? And I think that means, you know, checking yourself. You know, when you about to raise your hand and say something in class, make sure that you aren't like that which you're sharing, right, isn't, you know, antagonistic toward the community around you. That you are, I think the way you framed it in terms of like being participatory in the community, I think that's great. I would also say make sure that you're giving to that community in the same ways that you are taking from the community, right? Because when you go to an HBCU, regardless of who you are, you're taking something from that space, right? You're gaining something from that space.
Right.
Put something back is what I'm saying, is what my gut says. I also don't want to tell white people, period, that they need to be applied to HBCUs because...
Right. Well, because the taking of a space from a black person is what kind of made me go, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. That made me feel a little uneasy.
And it's also like we do have to say, right, that like not everyone gets accepted to HBCUs, right? And we also don't even know if the white man's going to get accepted, right? So let's put that out there
first. Right, because you don't get diversity points, right? Like, that's not how that works. So,
and so there's that potential, right, that he could get accepted and then theoretically, right, be quote unquote taking a position away from a black person. But part of me also wants to say in my spirit, this is the spiritual travail coming through. That person whose quote unquote spot he took, it wasn't their spot to begin with. And they were meant to go somewhere else.
I don't know. That feels a little murky for me. I wish that we could have a more firm answer for you, Lucas, but I would say apply. See what happens and pray about it, sugar. Because
not pray about it, Jesus. But make sure you play the black Jesus. Don't play to white.
Well,
Jesus.
No, don't take the black Jesus. Go to the white Jesus that you always then had and see if he can get you into the black school. Damn it.
Period.
Okay, so Aaron has something to say about our porn episode.
Yes, that's our porn episode. It's called "Let's Talk About Sex, Baby." Let's talk
That's
about
not what
you
it was called.
And me.
That's not it.
It is called "Let's Talk About Sex."
You did a lot of extra there.
Well, here we are. okay, email from Aaron. Aaron lets us know that they are a middle-aged, rural, straight, white Canadian. Where are all the black people in your letters?
Listen. Okay, wait. Middle-aged. Okay.
Middle-aged, rural, straight, white Canadian.
Okay.
I appreciate the Canadian, because that definitely, you know, throws a little something, a little Mrs. Dash on top.
A little a boot.
You know. Yeah.
A little A. I feel like we've been using a lot of the black letters in the show. So in the weekly listener letter. So we got all the white people today. What you got?
Right. So normally I shut up and listen to the show because, well, what the hell am I going to contribute to the convo? But porn, that I can talk about. I do want to ask if you folks found porn in the traditional way, i.e. in a cardboard box in the woods or an abandoned building. Sounds like you're a bit too young for that, but ask people in their 40s and up, and half of them will tell you that was their first exposure. That or finding it under your parents' bed. I imagine an annoyed wife or slash significant other forced their beau to get rid of it, and they didn't have the heart to toss it out, so left it for others. That or they didn't want the garbage man to find their kinky shit and know it was them. One or the other. Anyway, I have a bit of an odd relationship with porn. They detailed how, you know, their parents basically kept the porn in the living room. They really? Were very casual about sex and sexuality, so not a lot of hang-ups going on there. I pretty much learned how to read on Penthouse Forum, and in the 1970s, it was pretty wild stuff. Before the Puritan recreationists took over in the 80s, those letters included pretty much anything you can imagine except kids. I think that pretty much meant that when I encountered something quote-unquote different growing up, my response was, yeah, okay, I guess that's a thing. Can't really tell if that's a good thing or a bad thing because I don't know what my attitude would be without that early exposure and my parents' general acceptance of it, but I like to think I had an effect on my friends growing up, and we're a pretty tolerant lot. Personally, I'm glad that porn is readily available and even a common thing now, but more than that, the sheer variety that's around and that the discussion around it being in the open is really important. They go around to say that the understanding that there's a difference between porn and life and that there are people who are part of it is brilliant. It's a physical soap opera instead of an emotional one, but the distinction between fantasy and reality is concrete. Also letting people of different sexuality who wouldn't know what that is see something or see someone who is gay and out and happy in popular media is a great thing. But when you're 14, 15, 16, you might be looking for a bit more. Yeah. My view is that pornography is another source of information that is now widely available to us for better or worse. Sure, bad information is out there, but good information is too, and it's just as easy to find. So their question is, did you find porn in the traditional quote unquote way? And I think we said a little bit on the show about that was not our experience. No. We were in nobody's woods.
No, my porn discovery was because my someone who was babysitting me, I don't want to say it was my cousin. I think it was my cousin. Yeah. Had found porn in the house. And like I guess my parents like were never like open about stuff like that. There was not conversations to be had about sex, sexuality, pornography, you know, what the kids are into, what everybody's doing. And so it was something that like for me was like very hidden, very secret. You guys talked about Nifty being somewhere that mm-hmm. you enjoyed, and like I had found Nifty, and like I think I was printing out stories on the actual printer that we had. And yes. I mean, listen, porn is like one of those things that I think to myself, if I ever have kids, like how do I want to engage them about sex, sexuality, and even porn? Like, I think there is like a healthy level of like being able to explore your sexuality and figure out what you like and what you don't. But there's also like, yeah, there's a time when it's too early for that. Like, I don't know what the right answers are there.
It's interesting to hear Aaron say that, you know, their parents' porn was like, you know, in the living room among the Disney Channel movies, right, you know, and stuff like that.
Can you imagine? That's
interesting to me, girl. Listen, I grew up in one of those families where if the kiss was too long on the movie, on the screen,
yes,
they would cover our eyes, right? Yes. Not even talking about actual sex, right? And so, yeah, I told y'all, I stumbled on my fourth. Yeah, I guess that was my first piece of porn. Like, I knew it existed, right? But I never actually seen it until, you know, that LimeWire situation I told y'all on the episode. Shout out to Mikael Street, who was our guest on that episode. But yeah, I definitely think it is people's introduction to porn these days is different than it was, you know, back in the day. I feel like it's definitely a lot more. I feel like you literally can stumble on porn these days, you know, yeah. Just like Googling something, you know?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like my little sister, she's 19. And while I have never had any conversations about sex or anything with her, I assume my mother has, because that is my mother's job.
I
do know that she knows about it, right? And I feel like she's known about it for at least a decade, because I've seen her social media and I'm like, girl, what you know about the little emoji with the little water sign, the little squirt, squirt, squirt emoji?
Okay.
What you know about that? What you know about the eggplant emoji, sis, or the peach?
But like, okay, but as an older sibling, is it not the older sibling's job? Because now I'm like, should I have been talking to my younger siblings about like sexuality, porn? I didn't, and I feel like maybe I was supposed to.
I think you're right. I think we probably should have. It only because we could have probably had the conversation differently and better than like our parents did, right? But I'm also a firm believer
that, like,
what the
fuck did I know at 19 or whatever? Like,
period.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know. But I feel like right now, if I were to call my sister and be like, let's talk about sex, darling, she would hang up on me.
I mean, if you frame it that way, I have a hard and fast rule that you shouldn't, if you want to have a difficult conversation with someone, you should never start off telling them that you want to have a conversation with them. Like, you just have to do it.
Oh, see, uh-uh.
To me,
I like to let people know. Let me give you this little disclaimer so you know what's coming down, honey.
I call that Marco Rubioing, because Marco Rubio used to always be in like debates, and he'd be like, the words that I hate the most are like, I'm gonna tell you a story, and I'd be like, shut the fuck up, like, tell the story. I feel like it's kind of the same thing. So okay, our last email comes from Clayton, responding to the diversity, equity, and inclusion episode called Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, Oh My, featuring Sharon Smith Akinsanya. Clayton says, in this week's episode, you read listener feedback asking about white and, by assumption, other privileged individuals being on DEI teams. I wanted to provide a perspective from a cishet white man, another one, who
we
had
got another white email. I know you fucking lying.
Who has sought out position on DEI teams at my school and job. Whenever I apply to join a DEI team, I preface my application with something along the lines of, quote, if you want me on this team, I will approach the work with the goal of leveraging my privilege for the goals and voices of folks of color, not as a leader, end quote. I've seen many people who look like me join spaces with the idea that all voices need to be heard and that skin color isn't disqualifying of opinions, and without fail, those spaces become dominated by those white voices. I know that's right. Sorry, editorializing. The letter goes on to say, on the other hand, my current DEI team is one that mainstreams historically marginalized voices and uses folks like myself to support, i.e. do the grunt work that is our prerogative and responsibility. This has led to many more successful events and conversations in our work network. TLDR, white folks leveraging their minds and bodies to make the work of DEI teams succeed for people of color has been successful in my experience. That is the end of the letter. I would say that, yes, I think that white folks need to use their privilege in ways that can be effective for everybody, right? Kind of in the way that I know that there are people who say that when you're going to vote, I feel like it's probably controversial, but like when you go to vote, you should be voting for like the most marginalized, right, to get what they need, because you know, when we help the least, I think that's even biblical, right? Helping the least of these.
The least of
like
these,
that.
Yes.
Which, I don't know how I feel about that hierarchical language, but it's, if it works here, sure. So yeah, I think that if you're using your privilege in a way that is not like sucking all the air out of the room, or that is not like really centering your perspective or your needs, especially in a DEI space, I think that's awesome.
Definitely. And I think it also reminds me of the ways that, like, I feel like people often look to, when we're talking about protests, and the ways in which we know that, like, police, in particular respond differently to white protesters than black protesters, and how when we talk about allyship and accompliship for white folks who want to be allies of black folks, particularly in a protest context, right? Seeing the pictures of, you know, white folks locking hands in front of the black people, in other fo- folks of color. I think what he's talking about is like a one-to-one comparison, right? Sure. This is doing that type of work in your workplace, or on your DE&I team, using your energy, your privilege, et cetera, to advocate on behalf of the Black folks, the brown folks, the queer trans folks, in your particular space. I think that's a great way to go about doing this, being a member of the team and putting in the work and not leading the team.
Yes,
period.
Absolutely. All right, coming up, we're going to get into our dishonorable mentions. And if you have feedback for us, you can tweet or post using the hashtag FantiFam. We'll be jumping in to respond to your posts on Twitter and Instagram. At FantiPodcast is our handle. We want to know what you guys think about why folks go into HBCUs, how white folks should be working in DEI. Where did you learn about porn? What you got to say?
Can I also, want to just note that, you know, if anybody who is not white would also like to participate in the feedback of it all, it would be great to hear what you all feel, think. And you did mention, I do want to be clear, this is a joke, sort of. You did mention that when we do our weekly feedback sessions on the regular episodes, we tend to center voices of color, queer people, trans people, etc. So it does end up leaving us with an episode where we talk, where the majority of the folks are not Black. And that's okay, I guess. Anyway, right. We'll be right back.
Growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of being a kid, but it's full of sugar and junk that you really shouldn't be eating too much of. I know for myself, I loved a sugary cereal, maybe something with some cinnamon, maybe something that tasted like a berry and had some crunch. You know, all kinds of different things. But Magic Spoon has zero sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs and 140 calories in each serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. I can hear my grandmother talking about this and being like, so it must be flavor-free. That is not true. It's actually very good. If you check out their variety pack, they have 4 different flavors, including cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. And mixing cocoa with peanut butter actually kind of makes it like a peanut butter cup. It tastes exactly like regular cereal from your childhood, but it's super nutritious. It's delicious and super healthy in a way that really brings joy to your mornings. My favorite flavor is the fruity one. Insert your gay joke here and I swear for Lord.
Yes, I also like the fruity, and I do feel obligated to say, you know, because I'm one of those people, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, soy free, low carb, and GMO free. Now, I don't know which one of those typically give the regular cereals their ooh-ah-ah sensation. Okay, so I was a little skeptical about Miss Magic Spoon. Okay, but I do really love the fruity flavor. I also like the frosted flavor. The cocoa and the peanut butter, I gotta work myself up to that. It because you do get that chocolatey taste and that peanut butter taste, right? Which I think is good for a lot of folks who like those particular flavors. But, you know, as somebody who still eats, you know, all them other cereals that we're not supposed to name, these are great and healthier replacements that still give you that similar taste. So if you want to try out some Magic Spoon, go to magicspoon.com/fanti to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code, again, it's FANTI at checkout, to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it is backed with a 100% happiness guarantee, okay? So if you don't like it for whatever reason, they will refund you your coins, no questions asked. Get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/fanti using the code FANTI to save $5 off. Welcome back. All right, we're going to get into our dishonorable mentions. This is our opportunity to call out the foolishness that we've seen in these streets for different folks. Sometimes also not foolishness. Sometimes it's actually great things that we want to applaud. And I will start by applauding someone.
Was your welcome back a Welcome Back Carter reference? Is that what that was?
Welcome back who?
Welcome back. Was that not what that was? You know, Mace did her cover
from the
of
song.
It.
Welcome back. It was not a reference to that, but it can be.
Because cool. Mace had great. A really dope... Never mind. Go ahead.
Mace as in the rapper, or Macy as in Gray?
Mace as in Mason Betha.
Mace, who would?
Mace, okay, from I'm with sorry. P. Diddy. Like, well, okay, back then it was Puff Daddy. Name?
Mason
I think it's,
Betha?
Isn't it Mason Betha? I think it's Mason Betha. Did I make that up?
Girl. Anyway.
I'm pretty sure what his name is. Did I? Yes, well, it's Mason Google Betha.
It. Oh, wow.
I didn't make this up. Go ahead.
Well, now we know.
Get your life.
I want to give my first honorable mention to Zach Stafford, former colleague of mine, who has a new book that is available for pre-order. Again, make sure you're getting it from a Black bookstore, independent bookstore. When Dogs Heal, Powerful Stories of People Living with HIV and the Dogs That Save Them. Now, you all know, I believe at this point, I hate animals. Wow. But with this book, three well-known leaders in their field, award-winning dog photographer Jesse Frieden, adolescent HIV positive specialist Dr. Robert Garofalo, and LGBTQ advocate and journalist Zach Stafford offer a refreshing, beautiful, and unique portrait of HIV infused with a deep message of hope. Each extraordinary profile shows the power of the incredible bonds between humans and their canine companions, whether that means combating loneliness and stigma, discovering the importance of unconditional love, overcoming addiction, or simply having a best friend in a time of need. Again, I don't particularly care for animals or dogs, but if you do, this is a book that you should check out.
I wonder if there is a Black-owned place that you can get audiobooks. Because I always get mine through, like, on my phone. But, like, I'm wondering if you can get audiobooks, if there's, like, a Black-owned place to do that.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Somebody out there, if you know, let us know.
Yeah. Okay. I am going to do a DM that comes from a listener via Instagram. It says, hey, would love if you did some commentary on recent bullshit that went down at Gimlet Media. I had no idea the Nod creators were treated so shitty. And this is kind of a DM because there's been a lot of blow up on social media this past week, or I guess it was last week now, talking about what was happening over at Gimlet with the Nod creators not being able to keep the ownership of their show, with another show having some, you know, racist shit going on. Terrell, I know you know this a little bit more than I do.
Yeah, so Brittany Luce and Eric Eddings used to host a podcast called For Color Nerds, I believe is the name of it. They had a community from that show, and then they both got hired over at Gimlet to start their show, The Nod. The Nod was really successful, and it became a visual show, like a short form series on Quibi, the app that no longer exists. But when that happened, apparently, you know, they came out last week, week before last, when they saw a colleague of theirs who was at Gimlet, is at Gimlet, who is producing a show called Reply All. And that Reply All show is about the issues that came to light over the summer at Bon Appetit. Mm. And so they just thought it was, you know, ironic that people who participated and supported the issues that they were having as folks of color at Gimlet were producing this show about another outlet's issues about race. And so they started sharing their experiences on social media, and it's become this whole thing. I mean, I think what they've shared is what we know takes place at outlets all across this country, whether it's audio specific or whether it's, you know, traditional news outlets, media the ways in which... the ways in which Black folks and folks of color and queer people, et cetera, and women are often gaslit in a lot of these spaces. And may I add, the ways in which some other people of color can also be complicit in the issues that we, as in this case, Black folks deal with in the newsroom.
Yeah, I mean, the way we actually have a whole episode on this, the newsroom where it happens, talking about being Black in a in a newsroom as a journalist. And it's just, it is a very pervasive issue. It's something that we're talking about at NABJLA all the time. We've seen that happen with KCRW this week with one of their former journalists who's been, you know, blowing up on Twitter, having conversation about, you know, dealing with race at KCRW. It's something that happens everywhere, to be honest, and it's really frustrating. So thanks,
Aruna. I will just say I'm glad to see folks feel empowered to share their experiences, because oftentimes, right, these are conversations that, you know, the black folks and the brown folks have within, with, you know, you have the conversation in your group chat, you have it with some of your colleagues, but we sometimes just don't feel empowered or aren't empowered, right, to share this stuff publicly. Yeah. And so it becomes this big issue at a particular point. And I think, you know, in particular after last summer, the blacks are tired.
Listen. Listen. I mean, and are not going back, right? Like,
period.
It's not going to be something that we do again. Okay, you got one more.
My last mention, this is a dishonorable mention. It goes to Azalea Banks. You know, she's engaging in transphobia again. Ooh. And going extra, you know, going that extra mile to be transphobic. I'm not going to read out her comments because I refuse, but I just want to say that Azalea Banks is... I don't want to call her trash because I have an issue calling black women trash, but her transphobia is disrespectful. It is uncalled for. It is unnecessary. And it is completely problematic. And somebody, you know, I think we all need to pray for her and, you know, put her on the sick and shut-in list, to borrow a term from the church house and from the read. What is you doing over there? What is going on?
I'm not praying for Azalea Banks. A full stop.
You don't have to.
Those comments that she made on Instagram, it was on Instagram or Twitter or whatever. I saw it on Twitter.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Like, no. 100%. Azalea Banks can... Never mind. that was a porn reference. Okay, it's time for...
Black History is happening every day.
Okay, so I just finished reading Ladies Who Punch, which is the book that is about The View. It's kind of like an expose on the history of The View and all of the scandal and controversy inside the building. And I, first of all, as a book... I'm a little bit challenged because there are some things that are just like clearly factually inaccurate and like they're little things. So it makes me wonder how many of the big things are true. But it was a juicy read. It's a pretty quick audiobook, but it brought back to my memory one of what has to be the greatest moments in the history of television, brought to us by Star Jones Reynolds at the time. Star Jones was slated to be leaving The View in a couple of months, but decided that she was leaving today.
Barbara! Okay. Wait, I'm so sorry. Do you mind? Excuse me one minute, you guys. I apologize for interrupting you. Something's been on my heart for a little bit. And after much prayer and counsel, I feel like this is the right time to tell you that the show's moving in another direction for its 10th season. And I will not be returning as co-host next year.
It's shocking to me that you would
I'm going
to
hold your hands right now, because as you might imagine, this might be the hard thing to do, okay?
Yeah.
And these viewers, you have welcomed me into your hearts and to your homes for 9 years. And it has been a privilege that I cannot measure with words. I love you desperately. I thank you for the opportunity. I'm not sure what the future holds, but I'm absolutely sure who holds the future.
Period.
Baby. Who? Okay, so I have to tell you that you guys have heard my best friend Jarrett on the show. He was on the Okay, Alice Likes to Get Information episode. I cannot tell you how many times I have started a sentence to Jarrett with, after much prayer and counsel. And like, I love that. And like, what I found out in the book was that the real Olivia Pope, that Olivia Pope is based on a woman named Judy Smith, actually coordinated this whole exit. And I was just like mind blown that another brilliant black woman was behind this brilliant black woman's exit from this show. Star Jones was never seen on The View again as a co-host. She came back years later. But I just think this is one of the best moments in television history. And I was really happy that we could highlight it, for Black History is happening every day.
Black History is happening every day. Shout out to Star the Jones.
Yes.
I was never a View person, but I do remember seeing and hearing about this moment and the goopery that was Barbara Walters.
Listen, the goopification, Barbara was pissed the next day, like Star was gone. It's a whole thing. Check out the book, Ladies Who Punch, if you want. If you don't, it's fine. Okay. Want to let you all know that Travelle was recently on a podcast called Follow Friday. You want to tell people about that really quickly?
Yes. So Follow Friday is a new podcast created by Eric. I believe his last name is Johnson. Don't hate me, Eric. But we went to the same Stanford graduate program. He was in the year before me. And he started this podcast all based on that old school idea that we used to do on social media for Follow Friday, when you just like tag people that other people should follow. And so he's turned it into a podcast. In that podcast, it basically brings on guests to, you know, big up people who we follow. And I was on the episode that came out last week when you all are hearing this. So please do check it out. I shout out some great people that, you know, some you know, some you don't, including my fellow co-host here. And it was great to be there. So make sure y'all check that out.
I was surprised to hear you saying kind things. I was like, wow, this is a little awkward and weird.
I love you, Jarrett. I really do.
I love you, Travelle. I really do.
Okay, it sounded like that was hard to come out your throat.
Okay, come on now. Anyway, all right. Finally, we have a pretty big announcement that y'all have been holding my feet to the fire for on social media. Fanti merch is probably here. As you may recall, a few months ago, we announced that we're going to be launching Fanti merch. And it took a little bit of time because I was being particular about different things and a lot of negotiating on this versus that and all of the different things. And we're excited to announce that we are going to be offering limited edition Fanti merch so you can tell the world you're a part of the Fanti fam.
So here's the thing. We're doing pre-order sales, all right, people? So you're going to have a limited time to grab what you want to grab, all right? And then it's going to disappear, all right? So don't fuck up, okay? We're doing it at a perfect time. Your check will be here, you know, through the weekend, at the top of next week. And so we don't want to hear nothing. It's coming. We've got various options. We've got t-shirts. We've got some hoodies available. A mask option available as well. So we've heard you. We tried to make them real cute, like, okay? If you don't like them, blame Jarrett. If you like them, talk to me.
Wow.
But we hope that you all like what you see. Make sure you're following us on Instagram and Twitter. That's where we will be announcing the exact link that you need to go to and stuff like that. But as you're listening to this episode, you should be able to go straight to our social media and find that particular information.
I just love the idea that people are like, climbing over each other to get a Fanti hoodie, like.
Well, here we should say this is not your Ivy Park drip, okay? We're doing pre-sale so that everybody who wants something can get something. All right,
but it's only for 2 weeks, so do it now.
Right,
get it quickly because it's going to be gone pretty soon. All right, if this conversation piqued your interest and you want to get more of this.
Good.
Go check out Let's Talk About Sex, Baby, featuring Mykel Street. We mentioned that episode here in the episode a little bit earlier when we're talking about porn. That is a great one for you to check out because we really kind of dive into our own experiences with porn and sex, primarily porn, less about sex. If you are a part of the Fanti family, I ask that you leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us using hashtag FantiFam. We are at Fanti Podcast, so you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at that handle.
You can always email us at Fanti@MaximumFund.org if you don't like social media for whatever reason. Or if that, you know, 180 character, I guess it's 240 characters, whatever it is, it's just not enough space for you. And as always, if you would like to become a financially supportive member of the Fanti fam, you can do that at MaximumFund.org/join.
Shout out to the creator of our music, Corice. You can find his music wherever you get your Slayworthy audio. That is CORECE. Our graphics are by Ashley Nguyen, who did our photos and all the video stuff and all that kind of cool stuff. Is pretty sweet. Our producer this week is Jordan Keller and Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
Period.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Yes, it has.
No, it hasn't.
The lies. The lies!
The lies!
Okay, sorry, Jordan. I'm hitting back in it.